Welcome to Local Talk, Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our 10-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, here with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Well, hello, Susan, and hello to all you listening at home. Thanks for joining us for our special Thanksgiving program about some of the ways people celebrate this holiday in several of these surrounding counties. It sounds as if we're taking verbal trips to tables all over central Iowa today.
Yes, I could say we are. We're starting out with the organizers of two community Thanksgiving dinners held in churches. Here in the studio with us, we have Laurel Beatty, who is the second generation organizing the community Thanksgiving dinner at the First Christian Church of Nevada. And on the phone, we have Mike Cleveland of the Boone First United Methodist Church. Mike, are you there?
Yes. Morning.
Good morning. Well, we'll ask both of you to wait for just a minute while we let our listeners know what's coming later in the program. We've been able to chat a little bit with Laurel here, so we're very excited to get started.
Now, are there any other community dinners in the listening area we're talking about today?
I didn't find any as ambitious as the ones in Boone and Nevada, though there are a couple of events in Webster City we'll talk about later with Kent Harvest. But when we live in the area we do, we shouldn't neglect Thanksgiving on the farm. And I just happened to have a recorded interview with Virtus Brockman, remembering a Thanksgiving past. And I think maybe you can give us some memories, too, right? You're a farm boy from near Story City. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. We had big Thanksgiving dinners because we had extended family. It was always on the farm, and Mom always did all the cooking, and then as we had marriages and new people in the family, everyone brought food, and that brought food from different kinds of backgrounds. Yeah. They weren't all Norwegians, you know.
Okay, well, we'll get back to Story City later. This sounds like a full plate, so we need to get going. And for those of you who are just tuning in, we are here with Laurel Beatty, who is the chair of the committee serving the Thanksgiving dinner at the First Christian Church in Nevada, and her counterpart, Mike Cleveland, from the Boone First United Methodist Church. They are in the midst of preparations for their big Thanksgiving dinners tomorrow, and they'll be telling us about them.
Well, we have Laurel here in the studio and Mike on the phone, so you'll be able to answer our questions at the same time. What a unique idea. We hope this can be a discussion. So let's start with Laurel. Is the celebration community-wide, Laurel?
Yes, pretty much so. We've been doing it for several years, and so there's a lot of people in the community that just turn to us and come see us every year. So that's a lot of fun.
And how big is your town?
We are a town of about 6,700, so we're not a real big town. We're the county seat in Story County.
Sure. Now, how long have you been doing this?
I've been doing it in Nevada. This is our 24th annual community Thanksgiving dinner.
Let's let Mike get in. And so you have the two of you introduced so you can share notes. Mike?
Yeah, Boone's a little bit larger. It's 12,000 people. And this is our 18th annual Thanksgiving dinner. And we've been expanding every year. We were up to about 380 last year, and we're planning on 400 this year.
400, that's a lot. How many folks does it take to pull this thing off in terms of volunteers, Mike?
Well, we have some sign-up sheets, and I was counting the other day. We've got 180 lines on our sign-up
180
sheets.
Volunteers?
And those include the people offering pies or different products, and about 100 people.
Now, are most of those church members, or do you have volunteers from throughout the community?
We're always happy to accept volunteers, and we have some very valued people who come in from other churches and give us a hand.
Well, I was just talking to Laurel. You have a little different story.
Yeah, ours is quite different. We only serve generally about 100 people, and that counts carryouts. I have, you know, on my committee, there's only really about four or five of us that put it all together. But we do have help from throughout the community. We have our local diner in town, Snack Time. The proprietor there, Eddie Garcia, donates the potatoes and cooks them and brings them in and then also helps serve. And we have all of the food that we get is donated. Very little is purchased to do the dinner. We're cooking only 5 turkeys and 2 hams, and we'll have, you know, all of the trimmings. And then we do get sides donated and pies are donated.
And one of the differences that I can guess, although I have to double-check with Mike, is you said it's like a family, and the volunteers come into the kitchen and then eat with the other people who are there.
Yeah, we serve for 2 hours, and we hope that that gives our volunteers opportunities to eat with their family. We generally, on Thanksgiving Day, find that there are any number of guests that ask if there's something they can do to help after they finish eating. So we try to put them to work and give the people who've been preparing it an opportunity to eat with everybody else.
Well, it sounds like you both really have a family feel to this meal.
Yeah, we actually in Nevada have families that come to our Thanksgiving dinner so that they can have time to visit with their families and don't have all of the preparation, so they will come and have dinner with us. Ours is a free will offering. We don't turn anyone away. If you want to donate, we certainly don't turn that away, but it is by no means a requirement to come and join the meal with us.
And is that about the same way is in Boone, Mike?
Right. We've talked about calling it a free will offering, but we decided that we've opted to leave it as free. Now, when people hand us checks, we don't turn them down. But we certainly would not want to imply that they needed to be able to make an offering to come and enjoy it.
Now, Laurel just mentioned that they had 5 turkeys over in Nevada. You told me the turkey, how you handled your turkeys, and I could hardly believe it. So
we cooked 18 turkeys yesterday, and I'm down here at the church now turning the ovens on to cook the other 14.
And then after they're cooked, where do you store them?
We've got a number of refrigerators here at the church, a couple of freezers. We try to put them in the freezer for a little while and get them cooled down and then move them back to a refrigerator. We do a summer feeding program here at the church for school kids. And so we've invested quite a bit in our kitchen facilities.
Well,
to be able to accommodate that.
Well, that's very impressive. And I guess do you have any special other uses for your kitchen besides church dinners, Laurel?
Not at this time. We have in the past. We hosted our senior meals when they were building their new building, and so the senior meals came out to our church. Our church is really unique because it's the only church in town that's really 100% handicap accessible because it's all on one level. There's no stairs to get in, so it makes it really convenient, and we have a large paved parking lot, so it's real convenient for that kind of activity. But right now, we just use our kitchen for our normal church stuff.
Well, now, Laurel, I understand your father started these community meals. Did you grow up helping with that project?
I did. I've been doing community Thanksgiving dinners since I was 16. The first one that Dad did was at the church in Denver, and that one, of course, was much larger than what we do in Nevada. But he has taken that to every church that he's been at, and then he retired. His last church was in Nevada, and that's where I took over when they left.
Well, now, this dinner is for anyone who wants to come. There's no means testing. And I think both of you run dinners where you know, you emphasize the fact donations are purely voluntary, so it's open to the community. And we did the same thing in Story City. I was in the Kiwanis Club, mm-hmm. and we sponsored the community dinner, and the same thing. It's modeled after the First Christian Church in Ames, I believe, that did that. That's where we learned our tactics in running this meal. And the idea was that we have a lot of especially widows in town who live in the condos and various places, and they might travel to see far-flung family on Christmas, but often they're alone on Thanksgiving. But over time, we found out that they're doing pretty well. In these condos, they have huge common areas where if you have an apartment there, you can serve a family dinner in the common area. So even though they've downsized to a condo, they have room to serve more people than when they lived in their house. Eventually, it evolved into a situation where we had more volunteers than we had people to come to dinner. Eventually, it was discontinued because of this, because, you know, when we looked at this project in the infancy of it, my fear was, where do we get volunteers on holiday? The reverse was true. We had more than enough people of all ages, kids, families. It was really moving to see that happen. And thankfully, somehow it evolved into a situation where there was not as great a need as we originally anticipated. So it played out over about a 7 or 8 year period that we did that. But thank God we did that. It was wonderful. It was a great sharing experience. And I can see with Mike and for you that that's a continuing thing that survived a long time in these communities. And I know exactly what goes on because we started planning for this way in advance every year. And the concern always was, will we get enough of this? Will we get enough of that? Well, that was a silly thing to worry about. As you can tell, and Mike too, it comes from everywhere and everyone, and people are more than willing to share and more than willing to plan their own Thanksgiving celebration around helping at this dinner. Isn't that true?
It is true. It's my belief that God provides. We had 1 year that it snowed, and there were more people than we anticipated because people didn't leave. They stayed in town. And at the very end of the time that we were serving, a family that was traveling came in off of the highway, and our church is right off the highway. And they saw a bunch of people at the church, and they came in, and we scrambled around and managed to find enough food to feed them. And it's always been, as like I feel like the fishes, that God always provides enough. We've never not had enough, and there's always been more than enough.
So the family just stopped by, and here was this bounteous Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
You know, that sounds like the plot of a Hallmark holiday show.
Well, I think God had a hand in that one.
Well, did you have any experiences like that, Mike?
Well, I'm fairly new at this. I traditionally fix Thanksgiving meal for my family, my wife's family. And so last year I told them that I wanted to help out with this, and that I would not be doing my Thanksgiving on Thanksgiving. And this year they were having trouble coming up with someone to be in a leadership role on it. There are plenty of volunteers, you just need somebody. And so I kind of got arm twisted into heading this up my first year. So I have very little personal experience with it. I do know that there was 1 year that we ran short of food. More people showed up than we expected. And they were scrambling around at the local Hy-Vee for some ham to finish off the meal. But we've always been able to come up with something.
Now, you said that this is your first year organizing. You must have a pretty good committee to step into and lead. Is that correct?
Yeah, there are about 11 people on the committee. And we have some of the same people that do the summer feeding program are buying groceries for us and making sure we have everything we need. And we've got people in charge of volunteers and people in charge of pies.
Well, to get back to Paul's question, how far ahead of Thanksgiving do you have to start getting it pulled together?
We were a little slow getting started this year, and so we've done this in 6 weeks, which they tell me I should have taken longer, but that's what we had, and so that's what we got it done in.
Now, my question is the same one that's answered or asked usually when they see me come into the room. Where do all these turkeys come from?
Ours are donated. It really is a community thing. There's a woman that is a member of our church that has a lot of connections through town, and she called me up and she said, I have 7 turkeys, you know, to be donated for the dinner. And so I have no idea where they came from. They just happened. And somebody in the church bought the hams. And so I, you know.
It just happens.
In my situation, it just happens.
It's manna from heaven, except it's meat.
Well,
Mike,
yeah.
Mike, where do all your turkeys come from?
Well, the sign-up sheet had room for 28 turkeys. And we had a local realtor that offered to buy half of them, and so we had to tell him that we didn't need quite as many as he was offering, because people signed up anyway, and we've been turning turkeys down. I've had people coming in and saying, well, do you need another one? I'd be glad to buy another one. And I'm going, no, not that we got enough. And so
now, isn't that wonderful?
It is.
When you open things up to giving, you always end up with more than you need. And that says something wonderful about how people behave and how they respond. And, you know, it's just a great thing at this time of the year to see that kind of sharing, that kind of willingness, and all the things that when we did the Thanksgiving dinner that were of concern to us, like where do we get the pumpkin pies? Where do we get this? Where do we get that? How do we decorate all the tables? Well, the Girl Scouts decorated all the tables, and all these questions were answered in due time, and we were want for nothing.
And then we don't turn the turkeys away. We only had a couple of extra, but what we do with the turkeys that we don't use for the dinner is then we do a Christmas basket for a family in town, and we, within the Christmas basket, this year we had, we got angels off the angel tree, and we'll do the children, and then we'll also provide a meal. So the turkeys will go for that.
You told me about something that you do with the takeouts.
The other thing that we do, one of my tasks today is to go around to the convenience stores in town and find out how many people will be working on Thanksgiving, and if they ask them if they want meals, and then we will deliver meals to the convenience stores for those working, since they're working and away from their families on Thanksgiving.
What a nice idea. Great. Now, Mike, do you have something similar in your venue?
Well, we do offer takeouts. We encourage people to call and make reservations ahead of time, but we don't require it. And we've got about 65 takeouts right now on the list.
Very good. Very good.
Now,
it's reaching out beyond the meal site. And particularly, I think it's very thoughtful, Laurel, to understand that there are folks who have to work on the holiday, and that they really don't have access to even a family meal sometimes if they have a long shift. So what a great thing to do. When you said that, I thought, why didn't we do that? That's a great idea.
Well, and Mike, what they do is on such a larger scale than what we do. We'll probably serve around 80 to 90 in-house, and the rest will be takeout. We have a little much smaller, so it's a little easier to do that outreach. And we're in a smaller community, too, than Boone.
But now, how many takeouts do you have, Mike? Did I miss that? Or
I think I have 65. Yeah. And our biggest challenge that I'm worried about is seating. We seat about 250 people here in Fellowship Hall. And we're expecting about 320 or so. And so the concern that people have told me in the past is getting people in and out and resetting the places and that. So that's our big worry at this point.
Well, I think I noticed that you had a second seating. You have 11 o'clock, and is that right?
Yes.
11 and what's the second one?
Well, 11 and 12.
11 and 12.
And somehow or other, I guess those, we tried that in the past, and they kind of run into each other. But we're expecting it to all go nicely.
And does yours also start at 11?
Ours starts at 12, and we serve till 1:30, and then we just serve as they come. And we do the, you know, like a buffet line, and serve the, have everything out there for self serve, and they come and they kind of go, and we can seat. We set up yesterday for I think 85 in the fellowship hall, and we may have to clean up and replace the settings, but. That's generally how we do it.
And do you encourage reservations also?
No.
You don't bother.
I don't bother.
Well, everybody, this is KHOI Community Radio, where we've been talking with Laurel Beatty of the First Christian Church of Nevada and Mike Cleveland of Boone First United Methodist Church, talking today about what is involved in preparing a community Thanksgiving dinner.
Before you leave us, could you just give our listeners the addresses and phone numbers of your churches? Especially, Mike, if you're still taking reservations, people might want to know that number. You'd like to let people know.
Sure. It's the First United Methodist Church. It's 703 Arden Street, corner of 7th and Arden. And the number is 515-432-4660. And like I say, we encourage reservations, but we don't require them, and we'd be more than happy to see anyone that shows up.
Thank you. And Laurel?
And our church is First Christian Church in Nevada, and the address is 250 West E Avenue. The phone number is 515-382-4866, and we encourage anybody that wants to come and enjoy a Thanksgiving dinner, and if you can't and are shut in and need a meal delivered, give us a call and we'll bring one out to you.
Well, thank you both so much, and I hope that everything goes, it sounds like it always goes the way it's supposed to.
Yep.
Well, and thank you, Mike, for joining us. And
well, thank you very much.
No pleasure.
And I think we have some music now for Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Yeah. A little Ode to Thanksgiving, it's called.
A little organ music.
Oh, good. Yes, I love that full organ sound. It's beautiful and reminiscent of Thanksgiving services occurring all over the area. And I just love that big sound. It's, you know, it's hard to find organists who can do that anymore. There aren't many organists fully qualified on the full organ. So,
well, just great. A minute. I want to give a little credit because this music was given to me by Paul Hertz, who is an organist who I think probably can play a full organ.
Oh, he certainly, but he's part of a rare breed now. It's hard to find those.
Not only that, but he also volunteers here at KHOI.
Oh, he's got his own radio program, sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but he gave us the program. He said, I have some Thanksgiving songs, and this is a Thanksgiving song he picked out.
No, it's great. Fantastic. Thank you, Paul. Now, what else is going on in the communities around the area? That's a good question.
Well, the most interesting one I found was in Webster City, and it's quite different than what they're doing in Boone and Nevada. And we have Kent Harfst here to tell us about it. Kent, are you on the phone now with us?
Yes, good morning. Thanks for having me today.
Well, we're so glad you could make it. I understand you work at the Fuller Center in Webster City? Is
right. Actually, the official name is the Fuller Hall Recreation Center. It's similar to a Y. It's operated off a private trust, but the city actually operates the day-to-day operations for it. So it's a nice partnership here in Webster City between the city and the Fuller Trust.
Now, why was the Fuller Center built in the early days?
Sir? Years ago, actually, it was built in 1956. A gentleman by the name of Fred Fuller wanted a community center in Webster City, and in his will, as he willed everything, all of his assets to the city to build a recreation center. And so we've got a wonderful facility that was built in 1956. And 13 years ago, we did a major expansion renovation where we built another huge indoor swimming pool, as well as a weight room, cardio room. We have racquetball courts, a good-sized gym, TV lounge, and game room for kids to hang out and play in, as well as a smaller multi-purpose room for a number of different things, including receptions, birthday parties, as well as yoga classes and other things.
Well, I was on the YMCA board in Des Moines, and it sounds like you have a full-fledged Y going on there.
That's right. It's very similar to that, and the nice thing is about Webster City, we have, through Upper Des Moines Opportunity, we do have scholarships available for youth that don't have families that don't have the money to participate.
Well, now that's terrific in a town the size of Webster City.
Yeah, we're lucky to have this.
Now, tell us about this community dinner. How long has that been going on?
This will be the 26th year, and this is the annual Fuller Hall Senior Center potluck. And it's been a partnership, again, this will be the 26th year, and we're hoping for about 70 people, and it's still not too late to sign up or just show up on that. And it's a partnership between Crestview Senior Living and Rehabilitation Center, as well as the city, in which they provide the turkey, the mashed potatoes and gravy, as well as the stuffing and a few other things, where the seniors in the community, they can bring in a hot dish or dessert and wonderful food.
So this is a potluck.
Yes, it's a potluck. Again, we
that
do
means everything's
the
homemade by ladies in print dresses.
I know. Yeah.
Oh my!
You know,
God.
Especially the pies are incredible. It's just like rag brine.
I really like that whole, if you'll pardon the pun, flavor to this event.
That's right, and you can't beat the cooking that these ladies and some men bring to the center.
Well, now you mentioned this is senior. Now, is this include families the way some of these others do, or
you know,
not?
Some do. It's usually catered for seniors 55 and older, you know, and somebody brings in a granddaughter or something, obviously we're not going to kick them away, but kick them out. But a majority of it is seniors. And I would say the average age is probably people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, and we even have some 90-year-olds that show up. So it's a wonderful cross-section of the community.
Now, how large is Webster City?
It's 8,076 is the latest census that was taken. So, you know, it's a nice community, yet it's close to Ames and the Des Moines metro area for people to drive.
Now, how many folks do you expect on Thanksgiving?
We're hoping about 70 to 75 on that, and we can handle probably up to about 100 people.
I think we need to clarify. This is not on Thanksgiving Day. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm glad you pointed that out. It's actually today. We always have it the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. There are some seniors that, if they're by themselves, this is really their only Thanksgiving dinner, where others can go to be with family and friends on tomorrow.
Is this connected at all with the congregate meals that you have on Main Street there in Easter City?
Actually, it is not, but I'm glad you brought that point up. We aren't have congregate meals today that we're going to have everybody come over there to. And congregate meals itself is a wonderful partnership between the City of Webster City and the Elder Bridge Agency on Aging, which is they administer a federal program for making sure seniors get a healthy meal.
And they will be closed tomorrow, right?
That's correct. They'll be closed tomorrow as well for people to enjoy Thanksgiving with their family and friends.
Yeah, I think congregate meals are a great program. My father participated in that. And, you know, he was a widower and not from a generation where men cooked. And so he got a square meal every day. And the joke was that John Wearson would not eat his peas and vegetables. So the woman who ran that kind of mothered him and said, John, eat your vegetables.
Regardless of age, we still have some people that struggle with their fruits and vegetables.
Oh, yeah, well, he was 86 and still being mothered by this lady. It was a wonderful thing. That's a federally funded program. And
yeah, it's a great program.
So now this is today at what time?
It'll be at 12 o'clock noon here at the Recreation Center in Webster City.
And you have a very interesting event tomorrow, right?
That's right. We have our annual, and I think this is probably at least maybe be the 21st year of our annual Turkey Trot. And what that is a fun run and walk here in Webster City that starts out at the Fuller Hall Recreation Center. And it's just a low-key, it's not real competitive. You know, we have some participants that make it competitive, but the nice thing about that is the only entry fee is two non-perishable items that are donated to the local food pantry at Upper Des Moines Opportunity here in Webster City.
Okay, and so now one of the things, though, that I noticed when I went on your website, was the Fuller Community Center website, was that there were only six people who'd signed up for the Turkey Trot.
And most of them usually just, I mean, they have the option where they can do that. It's such a low-key race that, you know, we don't turn anybody away. And typically we have about 100 people just show up and sign a waiver a few minutes before 9 and off they go. So we don't have people pre-register.
What time is it again?
It's at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning on Thanksgiving, and we always like to joke about it because people can walk or jog that and go home and eat a bunch of food the rest of the day, not feel guilty about it.
Right. They get their calories burned off ahead of time.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Do you have any other things you want to tell us before you...
You know, we have a lot of great things going on in Webster City, and actually today is Wacky Wednesday for the local businesses in town through the Area Chamber of Commerce office. You know, similar to Small Business Saturday, which we have that also, but Wacky Wednesday was started a few years ago as people's response to both Black Friday as well as some organizations that are open on Thanksgiving, where our businesses are closed, obviously, tomorrow. But from 4 to 7 today with a lot of local businesses, we'll be having different specials on that to give people, you know, a chance to shop locally before Black Friday, where a lot of people will go to metro areas as well as big box stores and to try to find deals. But it's really important for Webster City as well as Story City, Ames, and other communities in Central Iowa to shop local. That you know, the turnover, you know, for instance, if you spend $100 at a local business, roughly $68 stays in the local economy, whereas a big box store, obviously some of that goes to their corporate headquarters.
That's probably true for all the towns that have shops. And thanks for telling us about Wacky Wednesday in Webster City.
And you can always, for people interested, you can always go to the Chamber website at visitwebstercityiowa.com. And that gives all the different businesses that are participating in some of the specials and sales that are going on.
Thank you very much for keeping us up to date in Webster City.
You're welcome.
Goodbye. That was Kent Herbst?
It's Harbst. It's a German name, and what makes it difficult for a lot of people is there's four consonants in a row.
Yes.
I've had it spelled and pronounced every way possible, so I'm used to it.
Okay. Well, thanks, Kent, and I know you've got a busy day.
Well, thanks for having me, and you guys have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Kent.
Okay. Yes. Bye now.
And now, in honor of the turkey trot, we have a little turkey in the straw.
That was Turkey in the Straw, one of those great old American tunes that date way back to the early days of Appalachia. It has such a great familiar sound, and I love Turkey in the Straw. Now, this is radio station KHOI-FM. I'm your host, Paul Wearson, together with my co-host, Susan Franson, and we've been exploring community celebrations in Nevada, Boone, and Webster City, and, well, now it's time to go out to the country and hear from Virtus Brockman, a farmer in Marshall County, telling about the Thanksgivings of his childhood.
This is Virtus Brockman. I was born in western Iowa. Then my father bought a farm in 1946 at Melbourne, Iowa. And I've lived in this same farmhouse since 1946. At that time, I was 16 years old.
Well, what did you eat?
We ate whatever my mother raised, chicken, hog. We milked a few cows. I learned how to milk at the age of six.
Well, I imagine you did lots of chores,
I did. As those years went along, I also learned how to hand-pick ear corn by myself with a team and wagon. Our high school had 2 weeks of corn picking vacation, or harvesting, whatever you want to call it. And I had my own team and horses. And that, I was a teenager.
So what did you raise besides corn?
They had hogs, milk cows, and fed a few cattle. This was during the Depression. Thanksgiving time, we had some ducks to eat.
Were they domestic ducks or wild ducks?
Domestic ducks. And my mother also churned her own butter, and we had buttermilk soup. Pretty darn good.
She must have had a garden where she raised some potatoes and carrots.
Absolutely. She had a big garden. Even had some gooseberry bushes and made some gooseberry pie. Haven't had any gooseberry pie in 50 years.
Well, I remember hearing about gooseberry pie. It required a lot of sugar. Was the sugar a problem?
You took the eggs and stuff to town and traded it for some groceries. That's kind of how it went.
Did you always have enough to eat?
I think we did, but it depended on how big a garden you had.
And how big a family, I suppose.
I had two brothers. There was just three of us, and my mother and dad.
So how early did you start to plow?
Probably 12 years old.
Where were you in your sibling position? Were you one of the, were you the oldest, youngest, middlest?
I was the oldest.
And did that mean that you continued to plow, for example, when your brothers got a little older just because you were the oldest?
I suppose that's true because I was 5 years older than they were.
Were there other chores that that I've forgotten to ask you about?
Oh, one of the big chores was to gather up the cobs out of the hog lot so we'd have it for the cook stove. When you were picking corn by hand, you just were praying that you could get done by Thanksgiving. And I think that was it. And if you weren't done, you went out and picked some more corn.
So the Thanksgiving part was really the traditional thing. You were thankful for having the harvest in, is that right?
I that's what I would say, and you still have that on your mind today.
Getting the harvest in.
Right. We, my son does the farming, and I help him harvest, and I tell him I work for free and I'm worth it.
Well, this year, when did you get the harvest in? When was it finished?
We got done the ninth day of November at 4:30.
So that's a pretty memorable time for you.
It is. It is. It's a big time when you start planting and getting done planting, but it's bigger time when you harvest and get done harvesting.
Was the 9th of November an unusually early time, or was it just a regular time?
Oh, here a couple of years ago, it was first week in December before we got done because of the snow and the rain and the ice and who knows.
Well, was that a bad Thanksgiving then for you?
Now the Thanksgiving is getting together with a couple of my children and also grandchildren and also about a dozen great-grandchildren, and everybody has a good time.
So you have a lot more traditional family Thanksgiving now than you did when you were growing up.
Oh, absolutely.
Is that it?
Hey, I love Virtus. He's great. And how many people are named Virtus anymore? This is terrific. I enjoyed that so much that it rang so true with a farm boy like me.
Yes, but I bet you weren't out there picking that ear corn at 6.
No, we were far more mechanized. And it was such a great year for farmers this year because we had a warm, dry fall and everyone got through their massive fields with these huge combines, and harvest has been over for a long time. And as Virtus used to say and has said, boy, harvest went right up to Thanksgiving and sometimes beyond when you pick corn by hand. So those were the days. They were tough. And I think that made Virtus a virtuous man. Hard work.
Well, actually, That brings up a something I would like to talk about. I had one guest that couldn't be with us. He was a turkey farmer. He told me some very interesting things. And one was he farms 200 acres, and they have some chickens, and he calls it a hobby farm because they can't make a living off of it. But why does he do it? Well, when he was a boy, he raised turkeys, and it was such a valuable experience that he wants his son to have the same experience. And so basically doing this is as hard work as it is. It's not the same kind of work as when your life depends on it. But it's that farm experience that – and it, I mean, he had 120 turkeys. This is no trivial activity. You know, it's money for Christmas.
It's more important than when you do it for a living, because you're doing it for the love, the labor, and the animal husbandry involved, and your relationship with the land and the animals. Can't beat that.
And that's right. Yeah. And that's a lot of what's lost with the big farms, is that those farm life experiences.
Yep. My 4-H calf had a personality. I loved him dearly, and I fed him all winter. And then in the summer at the fair, when I showed him, I had to sell him and say goodbye to that steer. And I had the advantage or disadvantage of knowing where he was headed. Slaughterhouse.
Did you cry?
Well, it was a poignant moment. But I have to look back on all those steers and say, thank you for helping me putting me through college. Those funds were valuable in putting me through college. So no greater love hath any calf than he lay down his life for his owner.
Well, since this is Thanksgiving, I think maybe it's time to move to the other things we have to be thankful for.
Well, we're talking about Mark Jackson here, whom I know. And Susan, you can explain how you ran across this material.
Well, I was just looking for Thanksgiving in different places. So I looked in the Story City website for a little picture, and down below it said, gratitude is. Mm-hmm. And when I read it, I thought, we need to read that on our...
Well, sure. Mark Jackson is city administrator at Story City, and also, in my view, a gifted writer. And here he talks about an article that he entitles, Gratitude Is, and very appropriate for Thanksgiving. Gratitude is, according to Mark, being able to get out of bed, put your feet on the floor, and walk. This enables you to do a great deal of what you want to do. It's one that most people take for granted, but for me, it's one of the most important. You see, my father was diagnosed at the age of 23 with multiple sclerosis. By the age of 32, he was confined to a wheelchair and needed to be placed in a nursing home at age 39. So, gratitude for getting up and walking around. Gratitude is having some great friends, a friend who makes you laugh, a friend who is there to lend a needed helping hand, and a friend who accepts you just the way you are, a family to love that loves you in return. Now, not everyone has this. If you have a loving family, consider yourself lucky. I consider myself lucky, says Mark Jackson. Gratitude. Good books to bring us knowledge, or music to lift the spirit, or a movie to make us laugh or inspire us, or a sporting event to enjoy and cheer. Gratitude is having a job that provides you with an income to live on and adds value to the world because, as my father-in-law said, all work has merit. Gratitude for times of disappointment, sadness, and pain, for it shows us what's important in our lives. Gratitude for making mistakes, because we all do, and learning from it. Gratitude for freedom of speech, to vote, and to worship. Of 195 countries, 46% are free, 28% partly free, and 26% not free. Gratitude for, well, it's taking the time to say thank you for those who helped you, because the person you are today is because of them. It might be a parent, a family member, a friend, a teacher, a coach, a boss, a coworker, or a total stranger. Gratitude for, well, your name. It's who you are. It's your identity. Yes, there are a lot of Mark A. Jacksons. I actually serve on the West Michigan University Alumni's Board, and another Mark A. Jackson is there. We've had a great deal of fun sharing this name, and we refer to each other as long-lost brothers. And when the other Mark met my mother, he gave her a big hug with a wide smile, a hi, Mom, and visited like family. Well, gratitude is a great dog. They give you unconditional love and companionship. Our beagle, Snickers, who we had for over 10 years, died of cancer last month, and he was such a great dog. Sometimes he was better behaved than the kids. Gratitude for where you live, the quality of life your community has, the jobs it provides, the education it provides your children, and the safety it provides residents, the quality of housing and the neighbors and friends one has. Gratitude for the kindness of strangers. Don't let one day pass without doing something for a person who may not know you or doesn't know you, help them, or cannot repay you either. Gratitude for the life God gave you and all the experiences and memories that go with it, because that is what life is all about. And gratitude for my good friend Jim Thomas, which he often says, gratitude is no accident. This is by Mark Jackson on gratitude at Thanksgiving. And you know, I do a little writing too. Here's a poem I wrote when I drove through Northwest Iowa and realized the profound change in population loss in rural areas. It's called Written by the Roadside. Out on Highway 3, there are copses of trees where farms used to be. Families labored here long and hard, nurturing crops and livestock in the yard. It's all gone now. There's little to see where Thanksgiving and Christmas can never again be.
Thank you, Paul. And this is the end of our program. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We are your hosts for today, Susan Franzen and Paul Wearson.
Well, and our guests today have been Laurel Beatty of the First Christian Church in Nevada, Mike Cleveland of the Boone First United Methodist Church. They're organizing community Thanksgiving dinners in their respective churches and communities tomorrow. And we also heard from Kent Harps about events in Webster City, and a wonderful rendition of Times Gone by Virtus Brockman of rural Marshall County. He told us about old-time Thanksgivings on the farm.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests along with relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed. Local Talk was engineered by Richard Morrison. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard today was Ode to Thanksgiving, performed by organist Carol Williams from her album, Carol Williams Plays. We also heard Turkey in the Straw in an arrangement by Timothy Rhea, performed by the Texas A&M University Symphony Band.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends, and remember, your participation is very important, and your generous contributions are also what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.